In our breakout and best-selling book, Looking for Angels, A Guide to Understanding and Connecting with Angels, Dr. Scott Guerin and I share how you can communicate with angels, understand signs from the universe and these celestial beings, feel at peace knowing you are always connected to Source, and much more. Get your copy today at lookingforangelsbook.com, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your local bookstore. And now you can even get the audio version narrated by me and Scott through Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. You are listening to A Psychic Story, a podcast that shares behind-the-scenes insights of people who lead supernatural lives among the ordinary. And I'm your host, Nicole Bigley. Join me every other Wednesday as I dispel the myths behind magic and lore. Welcome to A Psychic Story. Thanks for joining A Psychic Story. Today, I have Terry J, and she just released a book called The Cowgirl Shaman Way, and very excited to hear from her about her journey and what brought her to this line of work, but then also hear a little bit more and get a teaser about what you can expect in her book. So welcome to the show, Terry.
It's great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, again, thank you for joining. And as most people who have listened to the show know, we really start out with asking folks how they got started in this line of work and what brought them to their journey and where they're at today. So I'll just turn it over to you to start to share that with us.
Well, I've been a horse person my whole life, and I've always done it professionally. You know, it's very different than being a backyard horse owner. I did a horseback therapy program for 35 years with disabled kids. So in 1990, I picked a child up out of his wheelchair and put him on the back of one of my horses. And he looked at me and said, "Ouch, I have a cramp in my hip." So I looked at him and I said, "Well, here, sit this way. It'll take the cramp out." And he said, "Hey, you can hear me." I said, "Well, of course I can hear you." It didn't dawn on me at the time that he was completely nonverbal. So we went through our routine. We did vaulting, which is gymnastics on horseback. And we have him do all kinds of fun things on the horse and slide down the tail, and it was just really a, you know, a great experience for them. And I took him off the horse, put him back in his wheelchair. So during our lesson, he and I were carrying on this incredible conversation. And the gal who was leading the horse was of course, only hearing my half. So when he went back to class, he said, "Boy, he sure is talking great." And I said, "Well, you know, he's very bright. Just because he has cerebral palsy doesn't necessarily mean he's mentally handicapped." And she said, "Terry, he didn't say a word. He can't, remember?" And I mean, if I was a horse, I would have done a buck, fart, snort, because when they're spooked, they do all three of those things at the same time. And so I asked her to hold the horse, and I went into the classroom. And they put a band on his head with a pointer attached, and he had typed out on his computer, "Horse lady can hear me." So I immediately had it confirmed that I did, in fact, hear his whole conversation. So I was kind of in shock, and I went back outside and just very matter-of-factly shared the information, and the guy was helping me said, "Well, you ought to learn to communicate with the horses because all animals are telepathic too." And so I thought that would be so cool to really be able to communicate with the horses, and it would make the program really safe.
Sorry, real quick. Was that your first time that you had ever had a conversation that thoroughly with another person?
Yeah, absolutely. When my first husband passed, I had a couple of weird experiences, but nothing long lasting or, you know, anything like that. This was really a shocker for me because, you know, I'm one of those people, I would never go get my cars read or go see a psychic, or I would never have done anything like that. I just assumed anybody who did that was a charlatan and a phony and out to get your money. I really would.
The next thing is that you went back after she suggested that you start to work and potentially communicate with animals.
Yeah. And I thought that would be so cool because I really just wanted to thank the horses for their contribution. They were so involved with the kids. You know, they really were. It wasn't just that they were just letting them ride on their back. I mean, they would, the kids that needed it, they would just say, "Wait, I have to touch that one." And they'd want to nuzzle them. And, oh, we just get squeals and giggles out of the kids. It was just incredible.
Why do you think that horses in particular are so much more therapeutic or used for therapy? Because I've heard that, and I've actually had my own experiences with it. And I find that their energy is just It's on another level, right? And not that all animals, I feel like, have that, but what about horses in particular?
The first thing is the fact that their size makes their energy field humongous. Just from size alone.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. Yeah. Okay.
If you've ever been near large animals like elephants, oh my goodness, elephants' energy fields, they're like 10, 20 feet outside of their body. It's huge. So you're going to be in that incredible energy field before you ever get any therapeutic benefit just from the movement of the horse.
That totally makes sense. I never thought about it that way before, in terms of like size, you know?
And they're so giving and loving. Oh my goodness. They're so fun. Mine have me very well trained now.
It's the other way around, right? After you went through it and you decided to start communicating, then the horses, you know, were very involved with the children and everything. And then you, what was the next step that you took?
Well, there weren't a lot of books back then. I mean, now animal communication is like a cottage industry, but there weren't a lot of books available. There were a couple that helped me, like Kinship with All Life by Boone, Horse Talk. I'm trying to remember who did that one. And then there was You Are Psychic by Keith Sanders Jr. And that was really about all that was out there. And so I was really just sort of limping along. The cool thing for me is that I ended up with two energy healers as mentors. And so in my early days, they really helped me to have no ego, get out of my own way, just receive the information and then share it where appropriate.
And so when you were looking and there weren't a lot of books out there, how did you come across finding those healers and those mentors, especially then?
To me, it was just sort of meant to be. You know, one gal I met at a horse show, and when we were doing a demonstration of our program, and because I was making wisecracks about horses that were being shown, and this woman that was sitting behind me knew the horses. I, of course, had no frame of reference, but I could repeat what was going on with the horses' minds as they were being shown. I mean, what very specific stuff, like one was missing its goat, the other one had a toothache. I mean, very, very specific things. So she knew the horses and the owners and knew that these things were true. So she sort of tapped me on the shoulder and wanted to know how I was doing what I was doing. And that's how I ran into her.
Yeah. So what were some of the things that they start? You mentioned that they taught you how to, or the mentors taught you how to get out of your ego and other things. So what was that journey like that when you reached out to them?
It was tough.
I imagine. I think that that's all hard work happens, right? It's not easy necessarily.
Yeah, because I had horrible self-esteem and so my ego was humongous and I had a need to be right, which you can't if you're going to do this work. Oh my goodness. You just have to be in surrender. And so it really, really ramped up my own spiritual journey of healing. And I had had some things that happened to me in my childhood that were not pretty. And so I had to really release all of that too. So the cool thing is now if I get a client on the phone or however I'm doing the reading, I can spot that, you know, 100 miles away and go, hey, we need to work on this. And so it's really been beneficial. My own healing has been beneficial to allow me to help others with theirs.
Yeah. And I think if you don't have that frame of reference and you haven't gone through the steps or the work, like you mentioned, it's really hard for you then to walk somebody else through it. Maybe not hard necessarily, but it makes it easier to be able to recognize and help somebody navigate their own complexities as they're going on their spiritual journey.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm just so grateful for all the bad stuff that happened in my life because I have a frame of reference now.
You know, I mean, even nowadays, like with the pandemic and everything, you know, even before we started talking, I mentioned that now it's even more important to share what people are going through because there is so much fear out there. And I'm definitely a firm believer that if you are out of all the bad, it also comes the good. And in this particular instance, my opinion related to this is that the earth is healing. It gives the earth a chance to reset and balance, gives us all a chance to reset and balance, and kind of forces us into something that we probably wouldn't have been doing otherwise, unless something like this kind of like shocked us.
I have seen incredible goodness in people come out in this. Incredible goodness, more compassion, more sharing, more humor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, it's just been incredible.
Have you seen all those videos or the, you know, the articles and everything about how animals are kind of taking back over the earth in a good way? You know, there's these cities that are just kind of shut down and there's these wild animals walking down the streets and, you know, from the sky and the earth as well, or the ground, you can kind of see how they're being able to integrate back into the natural path because we're not all out there. And
I think it's pretty amazing. I really think it's amazing.
Now, where do you live?
I'm in Carson Valley, Nevada, and we're one valley over from Tahoe. So it's just gorgeous, just a gorgeous area. And we've been very blessed because we're very rural here.
Mm-hmm.
So it really has not, I miss thrift stores and getting my hair done. That's really about it. But other than that, our life has not changed.
Yeah. Well, and that's good. I mean, I can imagine being out there. I'm in the metropolitan city and for a while it was kind of like the apocalypse, walking outside and not seeing anyone really, even when you're just putting out your, you know, your trash and everything. But then now the energy from it, I really felt like it was a good reset. So I haven't been in Nevada. I'll have to go and make a trip out there. But I wanted to kind of go into, anything else related to your journey and how you got started and working with your mentors that you wanted to dive into a little bit more before we get into your book?
I think it's just really important for people to understand about energy healing. Energy healing is so critical to your well-being. We're 99% energy and 1% physical. I don't understand why allopathic medicine is totally focused on the physical. I really need people to know and understand that energy healing produces miracles. Disease is issues in the tissue, and if you can release the negative emotions that have caused your dis-ease, you can heal from about anything.
I didn't realize that it was 99% was energy and the 1% was physical, that statistic.
Yeah, that's been proven in medicine.
Wow. And yeah, you're right. It takes forever for modern day medicine to kind of catch up to that fact. And so when you were going through and, you know, learning from your mentors and going through the journey, what are some things that then led you to want to write this book that you have, which is the 7 easy steps to develop your intuitive ability so that you can share? Because you mentioned one, that going through it was hard as far as evolving, which all good things are a little bit, right, for you to get to that point. But then your book also says the easy way to look and then develop your intuitive ability. So I feel like there's like you're almost kind of doing a stepping stone for people so that they can ease into it. But I want to hear from you and your perspective and not put words in your mouth on that.
Well, I've been teaching since I was 16. I started teaching writing lessons, and that's how I got into doing the therapeutic program. And so I've always looked at breaking the lessons down into components that are easy to absorb. I even look at horseback riding as first you build midline stability, then you get head and neck control, and then you get gross motor coordination, and then you get fine motor coordination. So it was incredulous to me that instructors would put a child on a horse and ask them to hold reins. They don't even have balance yet. So I looked at my own work the same way. How do we build the components to develop your intuitive ability? People think these are gifts. They're not gifts. They're skills. We're all born with 10 senses. We have the 5 intuitive senses, and then we have the 5 physical senses. So we have intuition, clairvoyance, clairsentience, clairaudience, and claircognizance. We all have all of those. But unfortunately, we freak out adults when we start using them as a child, and they help us to shut them down. And so it isn't like we have to learn something new. We just have to reactivate them. And I think just having no ego, getting out of your own way, learning to ground is so important in this line of work. You know, it's really important. And then also healing yourself so that you can keep raising your vibration through self-love. I think that's the biggest thing that raises your own vibration so that then you can pick up on other high energy vibrations.
Do you think that that's why there was a big wave or movement, I should say, of self-care and self-love before all of this other things happened with the pandemic? because I was personally, it was great for me to see the self-care, self-love kind of happening. And you mentioned the grounding and why that's important. But really what resonated with me when you just said that is the fact that it is all about self-love. And until you have that energy and you're able to embrace it yourself, then you can share it with others and be able to share that energy, right? So do you think that there was that intentionally was like a universe's way of almost preparing us for what's happening right now?
I don't know. I knew something was coming. I really had that sick feeling in the pit of my stomach that something was going to, you know, drastically change. And I wasn't getting any information on what it was. And then a friend of mine borrowed my truck and wrecked it and killed somebody in the process. And I thought, well, that was it. And no, that was not it. That happened the end of February. And then when this happened, it was like, oh, okay, so that's what it is. You know, that's what's going on. I think people are starting to understand the difference between narcissism and self-love.
Yes, yeah.
Big difference there. Yeah.
Yeah. And you, so I want to dive in a little bit more because you mentioned the importance of grounding and healing and the energy aspect and self-love. And I don't want to dismiss the self-care that people do when you take a moment just to take it for yourself. You may take a bath, bubble bath, you may relax, whatever that looks like. But it's very different in my mind. And when you're looking at what that really means when you're grounding yourself and you're reflecting in self-love, right? And it could look very different for each person, but for you and your students and when you're teaching and in your book, what are some of those things? I guess let's just kind of dive in. You mentioned that there are 7 steps and I imagine that the grounding aspect is like probably step 1, right?
It is, absolutely. Oh my God.
I am a little bit, just a little bit.
Sorry for laughing you.
Oh, no. I mean, I love it. I'd rather have you do that. It just shows everyone, trying to send everyone good vibes who are listening to this right now. So.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's just so important to learn to ground. It makes you feel so different. And, you know, sometimes when you're afraid and you just realize you're connected to the earth and you're open to source energy and you allow that source energy to purposely flow through you, it's just incredible. It's absolutely incredible. And when once people learn how to do it, they just have to remind themselves, you know, to do it.
Yeah. And some of the things that I've learned over my time is that for grounding, again, it could look differently for different people, but it could be you're meditating in the morning, you are meditating in the evening, you go outside in bare feet and you just stick your feet within the grass. So what are some of the things that people can start to do in their daily lives on a day-to-day basis? Because it does require repetition and almost kind of like brushing your teeth every day or practicing, you know, regular hygiene, like you should be doing that just for your soul and your spirit and the grounding aspect, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I agree completely. I think I've never been able to meditate, so I can't. I was introduced to Nichiren Shoshu Buddhism when I was 17, and I loved that practice, and it got me into that, I don't know, with the alpha waves or beta waves or whatever it is.
Isn't that a sense or a type of meditation or no?
I think so, but it's you're not being quiet.
Oh, really? Okay. So for people that aren't familiar with it, what is the transcendental, you know, what does that look like? The Buddhism part?
Well, it's chanting Nam-myoho-renge-kyo.
Okay. So it's the vibration of sound.
Yes. You get a room with a whole bunch of other people chanting. It's incredible.
So for you, it's that it's not the meditation, but what grounding techniques. So that's kind of the first step. So to get yourself grounded and get in the practice of repetitive, you know, the repetitiveness of it so that you are in a good space. What do you suggest to your students?
If we can back up a minute. Truthfully, we have to set our intention first. Intention is so powerful.
So first is intention.
Yeah, for anybody that needs to brush up on it, I love Wayne Dyer's Power of Intention. That's good stuff. stuff.
Yeah, I miss him. I loved listening to his radio show on Hay House for every morning when I would get up. It was not my meditation practice, but my way of just getting my, like you said, intention and frame of mind. Oh, gosh, because yeah. It was nice to just have that. And even though he's no longer with us in this physical realm, he definitely is spiritually, and you can hear him on some of the apps if you're interested, or also pick up his book, like you mentioned. Yeah. So setting your intention first, then the grounding aspect, and then I will
then grounding.
And I'll turn it over to you to talk about the other steps that you list out in your book.
Yeah. And grounding, there's several different ways to ground, and people have to find what they're comfortable with. But to me, it's growing roots out your feet and your tailbone, sending them to the center of the earth, wrapping them around the core, bringing them up, opening your crown, bringing in the white light purposefully and with intention, and then tying the two together in whatever way feels comfortable for you. That to me is being grounded. And then the next thing is turn on your ability. I like it when people have a good switch, a good on-off switch. I don't have one. And it's been very detrimental in my life.
When you have that on-off switch, or when you suggest that to people, what do they need to do to either visualize it or have that intention? What does that look like for them?
I think it's whatever works. I've had people just twist their ring or twist their watch or pull an earlobe. It's whatever signal they can give themselves to turn it on and turn it off. And I have not yet been able to. I've got some filters that work pretty good right now, but I do not have an off switch. I am on all the time.
Well, so the intention, the grounding, turning in your on-off switch, and then what is like another step that people take?
I always recommend a heart-to-heart connection. And of course, you have to do this with just visualization and intention. But we want to be able to connect our heart chakra to their heart chakra, whoever we're talking with, whether it's a human or an animal. When I'm doing an animal, I connect to the human first. When they start talking about the animal, they obviously have that love connection. So that's the most powerful energy in the universe. So I can just connect to them. And then when they start talking about the animal, then I can connect to the animal directly. I don't have to go through them. And that heart-to-heart connection is really important. And once you do that and you can feel that, then you do your third eye to their heart. And it kind of makes this triangle. And I love the physics of this. Anytime you have three points, energy will flow.
You're just blowing my mind today. I learn something new every time I talk with someone. But yeah, no, I never. I guess that's also why triangles are such an important symbolism throughout different cultures and societies, because of that fact.
Yeah. So you're basically allowing the energy to come through your crown to your heart. That's the short side of the triangle. Then you go to their heart. And then you go back to your third eye. And this just opens up incredible stuff. When I teach my classes in person, I use a shoelace. So I hold the shoelace at my heart chakra. They hold it at their heart chakra. And then I hold one at my third eye and then back to their heart. Just so that you get that visual of the triangle. And then it's amazing because it's like I've had clients where, you know, where I'm teaching them this and they go, oh, my goodness, I can feel that. I can really feel that. And then I go, I know everything about you now.
Well, that's awesome. When your third eye is opening, or when you feel it, either yourself or for others that have explained it to you, what can somebody expect or to feel? Because I know on my end what it's like. It took me a long time to kind of know whether or not it was opening, close, that sort of thing. But for others, what could they expect to either feel emotionally, physically, or even visually in their mind's eye?
I think with our third eye, the only thing we're going to get is visual images. But the images can be stills, or they can be like little mini videos. You know, we're going to get both. It's like if I'm doing a reading on a horse. I did one last night, and I went, your horse did the split with its back leg. And she went, what? I said, yeah, he's got all these pulled muscles, tendons, and ligaments on the inside of his, let's call them thighs for lack of a better term. And on the inside of his hind legs, he's all pulled because he did the splits, and horses are not designed to do that. And of course, this client went, what? And then she went back and looked at pictures and looked at videos and saw the moment it happened. So, you know, she got confirmation. At least she had someplace to start. So you get videos, but it's going to be all visual. To me, if we're going to hear something, we're going to get it in the auditory processing area of the brain, which is right above the ears. It's like it bypasses the ears and goes to that hearing part of the brain. And taste and smell, you get smells in your nose. Dogs are always trying to give me smells. Oh my goodness. Where's the dog that smells like this? Where's the human that smells like this? And I go, how humans look, show image. And then they send me an image and I'll be able to describe the dog that they're looking for.
So what you're saying is, and I've said it before on the show, my grandmother, when I was really young, she mentioned to me that in your third eye and your mind's eye, so to speak, because other people refer to it like that, that you can, she sees it as a movie, like you're talking about, almost like a film that's playing. I thought at the time, because I was younger, so I didn't necessarily understand what she meant. I thought it was like a movie playing in front of her, like in real life, like seeing it physically from a visual standpoint. But that's a good thing that you mentioned, because a lot of us probably don't realize that we are seeing things in our mind's eye, because that's where our imagination comes from, our creativity. We're mentally projecting in a picture in our mind or our mind's eye, third eye, what that is. And so what you're saying is that that's also an option in terms of communicating with animals and even other people, depending on how they want to share something with us. Because the language may not be the same if you're speaking English versus, you know, Spanish, that sort of thing. But when you're talking from an energy standpoint or communicating from an energetic standpoint, then that is one easy way to share information.
Absolutely. And you brought up a good point. They've shown through all kinds of different brain scans that the imagination in the brain is the only part of the brain that is receptive to intuitive information.
Really? Wow.
So when they do brain scans on people doing this work, parts of the brain light up that don't light up for anybody else. Isn't that fascinating?
It is. It's like, that's why I was quiet for a second, because I was just thinking about it. Another thing I heard, and you probably realize this or know this, but so inspiration, the whole word inspiration comes from in spirit.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, again, mind blown. For me, when I heard it, I was just like, oh, inspiration, creativity. Sometimes I think that as humans, we don't really consider the intent or the intention behind the reason why we're using certain words or how words kind of came about and what the creation was. And that goes back to the energy you were talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
That there's the intent, the energy, and there's a reason behind all of it. So, yeah, I just got chills thinking about it. But so you mentioned the heart to heart and thinking about it in your mind's eye and your third eye and that triangle creating the energy, and then people or animals, however that communication is happening, it can be visually, it can be through scent, it can be through whichever way that it's easier for you to kind of pick that the particular person up and get that information. What else would people experience, or what is the next step?
You can get things tactily. You can get things tactily, and you can also feel emotions. So those are how we pick up stuff with clairsentience. You know, clairsentience is clear feeling. So it can either be emotions, it can be physical pain or discomfort. The next step is the hardest one for most people. It's stop thinking.
Thinking or analyzing, right?
Just turn off your brain. Mm-hmm. You want to go into no mind. And I say just feel like you're a sponge of information with no preconceived notions and just get out of your own way.
And I would imagine that the other thing for that is when you're getting that information, like you said, like get out of your own mind, don't think about it. I say also don't analyze it, because sometimes if you were to receive a message, you automatically want to try to understand it and put it in from a perspective that would make sense to you. And that's not necessarily, it's not necessarily the thing that you should be doing, because it may be a message that later on makes more sense to the person or to you. And so as you're being a receiver of this information, the best way is just to relay it as it comes through raw and fresh versus trying to analyze it, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I get stuff that is so bizarre. I mean, I talked to a dead guy the other day, and he was jumping around and he had a box of macaroni and cheese in each hand. And I just went, I don't understand this. I said, but he's jumping around and he's got a box of Kraft macaroni and cheese in each hand. My client burst into tears and laughed at the same time. And she said, that's all he ever made me was macaroni and cheese. So this was, seems like silly information, but it was so critical to her.
Well, because it's validating, right? I mean, and I actually, even when you were thinking about it, I thought, man, he either loved macaroni and cheese or that's all he ate or all he made. And that was such an important message for her. And if you are editing it or you're not sure in terms of the message that you get and you want to relay it to someone else, then that's doing a disservice to yourself and to others, because I can see where it is harder for people, especially if you're just starting out mm-hmm. in the practice and you're trying to refine it. Because again, we automatically go to either that place ego or that place in our brains that we want to rationalize it. And so it's just enabling you to be open and kind of go with the flow and go with the information that you're receiving, because then that in turn creates a flow of being able to receive more. So it kind of feeds into it.
And I think when we stop thinking and stop using our brain and just go into feel mode, we're going to get stuff too that we're being given it for our own edification, and it is not to be shared. That's tough. Those are tough ones. Or there have been times when I have been given wrong information, and I knew it was wrong information, and in my head, I'm arguing with my guides, going, that's wrong. Why should I tell them that? That's wrong. And they go, tell her. They're like yelling at me to relay this information that I absolutely positively know is wrong. I relay the information and I'm not happy about it. And a couple weeks later, I get a call or an email and it's, hey, remember that reading you did? Oh, yeah, you're the ones I had to give the wrong information. You knew it was wrong. Yes, I did. So what positive results have you had? And they go, you aren't going to believe this. And I go, yeah, I will. And they tell me how the wrong information yielded this incredibly positive result. So we can't judge it.
When it's wrong information, like, did you tell the person at the time that it was wrong information, or was it?
Oh, no.
Okay. So
no.
Explain, can you give me an example without, you know, divulging clients per se? Just.
Well, it'd be like if, I'm just trying to think of an example where you tell them to go someplace because they're wondering about a job. And you see that they're not going to get that one, but it'll lead to the other. And but you have to be firm that they go to the first place in order to have all the other things fall into line to get them to the second place. That would be a generalization of the kind of information where they're thinking they're going to get their job and it's not at that place. But you want them to have that enthusiasm that that's where they're going to get it. You see?
Yeah. So it's almost like it's in divine order, the information you're giving, yeah. because it is a ripple effect or it's a trigger for something else. And then ultimately yeah. they get to where they need to be.
And you see the same thing with relationships. They're dating somebody and they think, oh, this is the perfect person for me. And you're thinking, well, just sort of stick with it. And they end up meeting somebody else because of the person they're dating who is the perfect fit.
Right. Okay. I see that.
So you know, it's those kinds of things where you send them down a path through guidance, you know, like you don't have an opinion on it, but you send them down that path because you can see the outcome that is going to be so positive, but they're banking on a different outcome and they get a better outcome than they could have ever even imagined.
So it's all in divine order.
Well, I always say you get what you want or something better.
Yeah. And we all live the lives that we want. We just don't realize it at the time, like you said, right? It's like we get what we want or something better at over time. And then you were saying, and then that leads you to the next thing.
Which is relay the information.
Mm-hmm.
And don't judge it. Relay it with kindness. Don't try to figure it out. It doesn't have to make any sense to you. And, you know, I do a lot of medical and veterinary intuition. And I'm not a veterinarian and I'm not a doctor. And I'm the first one to tell you that, but I'll tell you what it feels like to me. I'll tell you what it looks like to me. And then I send them to their vet or to their doctor, you know, to get confirmation of it. And I've had some really weird stuff. I mean, I've gotten really weird stuff.
Like what?
And sometimes they'll, oh God, like this gal says, yeah, my horse has navicular. And before I can even stop, I'll go, no, it doesn't. So like, wait, I never go against veterinarians. And I go, no, go get another diagnosis because this is not navicular. This is like a problem with the deep flexor tendon. Go get x-rays. And, you know, this is a problem in the horse's feet. And of course, you know, they follow the advice and they go, you are spot on. The horse does not have navicular. And a lot of times when people hear that a horse has navicular, that's career ending for the horse. So it's things like that. I've had people ask me about, you know, there was something on their mammogram and And I just said, well, this looks like a calcium deposit because it's really hard. And they go, yeah, it is really hard. And I go, quit worrying about it. Just put love into it. You know, this is really upsets me when people battle cancer. Oh, stop. If you send love energy, which is the highest vibration, into a tumor, the tumor dies. It can't function under the onslaught of all of that love because it's a negative function.
Yeah, and you mentioned something earlier, the dis-ease, which a lot of people probably don't necessarily know where that word came from, talking about words and where they came from and the intention behind them. And dis-ease, and you'll probably be able to say this better than I can, but is literally about the disinformation or the dis-ease into something. And it's, for the most part, all energy related. So you get the disease in your body because of, like you mentioned very early on when we were talking, there's tension or there's stress or there's fear, something in the body and you, or in your mind and your spirit and your soul. And then it transforms and transmutes into something from the, in the physical.
Yeah. It's very specific too. I mean, I look at people with women with breast cancer, and I can just say, so what is the grief you're holding on to? What is the sadness? What is the disappointment that you're holding in your heart? And they, every to a number, can say, well, it's this. And I go, well, after how many months after your mother died were you diagnosed? And it's usually 6 months to a year. So you're holding on to the grief of losing her, when if you could raise your vibration, you could tell that she's right here with you right now still. So the grieving is just making you sick. And a lot of times with energy healing, they can turn around and there's no sign of disease. Even my sister was diagnosed with lymphoma. She was given 6 months to live because you can't work on your family members. I sent her to a healer in San Diego. She had one session with him, terminal lymphoma. And she had one session with him, called me from the airport on the way home, said, it's gone. I felt it leave my body. And I said, was it like bubble wrap going off in your cells? And she said, yes. I said, I've had that happen before. And she had another scan 2 weeks after she got home, and the doctor called her and said, what the heck did you do? It's gone, completely gone.
Wow, that's amazing. So miracles do happen, and it's the power of intent, the self-love, also sending love and energy, and just realizing that we're more than, a lot more than just the physical beings, you know, here on Earth. And what would you say to people, because I have, it's more of a question of mine, and if you don't feel like answering, I totally respect that. But when people are saying that there's certain things that are genetically predispositioned and you get that. So for me, I'll just kind of give an example. When I was growing up, for some reason, I had this fear of something within my breast area that I was going to be getting cancer or something there. Have no idea why, because I was really young. And at the time, I didn't even know what that was. So it was probably, in my mind, looking back at it now, something intuitive and what you were talking about from a fear-based or a grief or something that I just wasn't focused on.
It can even be from a past life. Sure. I've seen people here that had these horrible, horrible symptoms. And it's because they were in a concentration camp last lifetime and they hadn't let go of that negative energy. It doesn't stay with you on the other side, but it kind of follows you when you go back into physical.
That was kind of my thought too, is that, and then growing up when I got older, I was like, well, maybe it was a past life thing and all of that. But in the history of my family, there is not, again, knock on wood, a history of breast cancer, and not to minimize what other people are going through, but it goes back to, you know, my question in the medical community when they say then that it's a genetic thing, because I do think that it is environmental, and it's also stress, energy, and emotionally related when you have something from a disease standpoint. And I'm not necessarily a doctor, obviously. I don't know about that genetic aspect of things, but I was just curious what you thought.
You can have a set of identical twins that have the exact same genetics, and one will get a genetic disease while the other never does. And the difference is the emotions that they go through in their life with their life experiences. And so you have one that doesn't know how to deal with their emotions, doesn't know how to release negative emotions, and they get the disease. While the other, because they never had the exposure to those negative experiences, never gets the disease. So it's really important to understand that disease is caused by stuck negative emotions. It really is, in most cases. You know, sometimes we get an accident, but did we attract the accident? Did we have a need for the accident? Those are questions that we need to ask. You know, and the same thing with, you know, when we wear out joints. You know, is that just because we've worn out joints, or is there a problem? Knees are an unwillingness to move forward. You know, hips are a childhood issue. So I'm looking at those kinds of things for myself right now. Like, what have I done? What have I not dealt with?
Yeah. And you mentioned, like, what have you not dealt with? I would imagine as well that, and you also brought up past lives, is that if you did not deal with something in a past life, then a lot of times it may manifest in this lifetime because of those same reasons, because there's something that you need to work through in order to just evolve and get to the next place in your spiritual journey that you need, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've seen way too many people have problems, physical problems in this life that they've dealt with all their stuff, and it was strictly bringing forward, you know, a past life issue. I work with obviously a lot of kids with disabilities, and I used to say, why would someone choose this? Because we do choose it, but we don't choose it as a human. We choose it as a God being. You know, we choose it when we're one with our source. So we're not making the choice as a human. And you just look at kids that are born with disabilities or get childhood cancer, and you say, why? And then you realize that someplace in their past life, they were not in appreciation.
Or they just wanted to have that journey or have that experience because it makes them that much stronger. And, you know, I don't want to say gets them into the front of the line, but a lot of times when you're going through things, it's because you're like you said, you've chosen it and you've selected it to go through and push through that growth a faster way, or I want to say faster, but in a way that you just helps to evolve.
Yeah.
Well, I really appreciate our conversation. And I want to kind of just one pause and see if there's anything else you would like to share with the listeners. And then also how people can get in touch with and reach you.
Well, the last step that we didn't cover is to disconnect from your client. You know, we've got connecting in the beginning, setting with intention. And then the last step is to make sure you disconnect from your client. And that's it. It's pretty simple. And it just takes time and getting out of your own way to learn to do it. I do private readings by phone all over the world. I love doing it. We have a TV show in process now that I'm very excited about. And my books are available on Amazon, and they're also available on my website.
And can you share that, your website?
Absolutely. It's just my name.com. It's TerriJay.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And if anyone wants to reach Terry, you can via her website, and I'm sure we'll be in touch, and I can't wait to hear more about the TV show too. So let me know about that and when I can update the show notes to make sure that people can go and watch you via TV.
All righty. It was great being here. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you again, and talk soon. Bye, Terry.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to A Psychic Story. Please be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode, and join the conversation on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. All episodes are free on your favorite podcast player or at apsychicstory.com.